Hi, I'm Louis Savvy, director of Sci-Fi London Film Festival. You're listening to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren FM.
Quite right, too. Or if you want another little take on the whole thing.
Sci-Fi London simply wouldn't exist without Louis Savvy. Nor, for that matter, would the Louis Savvy phone link on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Relax and let your mind expand.
Way forward. Indeed, check your emails as well. Refresh, and then you find that telephone numbers which you might have thought have been temporarily mislaid come swinging back with the words, "We'll tease ahead to Sci-Fi London 2012. Louis Savvy, how are you, sir?
Morning, Alex. How are you, sir?
Excellent. Delighted. Of course, we were singing your praises recently with the debut of Phil Leonis on the Midweek Drive's Wednesday feature, and he was so delighted that Phil's actually back again next Wednesday to update us with all sorts of other wonderful things there. Of course, it was the world premiere of the wonderful event movie The Truth Is Out There, about exam results. You see, if it was done by an exam board, people would turn around and say, "No, it's not out there, we don't know the answer, we put the wrong ones down." It's a whole new world, really, but still. So, yeah. Louis, how goes it, Louis, in terms of the wonderful world of science fiction? Because in the studio we have James Barkley. I think it's fair to say, James, science fiction and cattle and pigs and such like, you haven't really crossed those fields as yet, have you?
Not really at all, no. Oh. But I'm fascinated to learn more about it, I have to
exactly.
say.
Yeah. Can we just pop you on microphone a bit there? Because you sort of said that very good. It's, I know it's an old radio technique, but, you know, microphone needs to be in front of it. Otherwise, you know, you're all over the place. It sounds I'm talking like that, and that's not good at all, is it?
Oh, I'm learning all the time in this job.
This is the crucial thing, Louis, and there are times when I'm thinking, you know, perhaps we just need to just strap our guests down a bit like Hannibal Lecter, you know, wheel them in. Not that I'm saying anything, James, there, but it's different.
I'd run very quickly.
Yeah,
get out of the studio.
Oh, I'm going now.
It's all too much. Anyway, it seems like only yesterday that we were celebrating the fantastic success of Sci-Fi London 2011. And presumably already your plans are afoot for next year's fantastic celebrations.
I was hoping to, a couple of weeks ago, to come and give you the scoop and pin you, you know, and say these are our dates. But we're still umming and ahhing. And it's just because it's more than likely our next event is going to be the first week in October.
Yep.
First weekend in October. But we're just still talking about the format because we're 10 years old and this is our sort of mini event in October, we're sort of keen to try a few different models, if you like, try a few different ways of doing things. So there's lots of deliberation going on and we're still quite not there yet to shout out and tell everybody.
It's a case of keeping things refreshed.
Exactly.
That's what it's all about.
Exactly. And also, and for next year, I mean, I would normally have posted our dates for 2012 for the following year by now. But it's a very odd one where the bank holidays fall because we're traditionally an April festival ending on the bank holiday Monday, which is at the beginning of May. And obviously next year it's on the 7th. Mm. Which means we would start on May the 1st, May the 2nd, because the bank holiday is on the 7th. So
it's very confusing.
Whether we're going to use that bank holiday or whether we'll just go a week earlier and remain an April festival. See,
it's going to be interesting.
Decisions to be made.
I mean, and obviously looking ahead, because we obviously schedule our year in terms of there are certain must-go-to events. There's the Newark and Notch show, there's the Badminton Horse Trials, there's the Sci-Fi London event, and coordinating folk from that point of view. So it's time. Perhaps we should just realise time's just an illusion and just leave it at that.
Exactly.
That's the key thing.
Exactly. There will be a festival next year, and there will be an Oktoberfest sometime in October.
Exactly.
So, and as soon as we've got the dates, I'll email them to you first. So you can, whatever time of the day it is, whatever day of the week, then you can announce them.
2 a.m. in the morning, I'll be trotting into the studio saying, "Yay!" Fantastic.
We've also hopefully got a couple of little special events coming up between now and October as well. We've been talking to a couple of the studios about some new releases that are coming up, which we might be involved with.
That's brilliant.
So, of course, again, I'll give you the scoop as soon as
Well, it's fair to say as well, Louis, that this is certainly the year where superheroes came of age. I mean, I know we've had superhero movies going back to the 1940s in many ways, and then you know, obviously we've had a whole range of characters, but recently caught X-Men First Class, Green Lantern coming up. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I loved it.
I felt I was going to put this to Richard Fitzwilliams, but I thought, well, you know, you don't know. He was focusing on movies that were filmed at Royal Ascot, and he gave a thumbs down, can you believe, to A View to a Kill. Oh, I couldn't believe that. but anyway, allowing for that, what's not to like about a movie that has Rose Byrne in black lingerie? I mean, that's all. That's all I say no more, but I just thought, you know, the Moira MacTaggert character, who we first see doing her sort of James Bondette scenario, where she goes into the Hellfire Club in 1963 America. It was an iconic moment. And actually, to be fair, the Bond thing continues, because if you waited for the end titles, I felt there was an awful lot of similarity between the kind of images we saw on screen and indeed the very first Bond, Dr. No.
There was a lot of very, very good styling around about that movie. I think he got the pacing and the beat of it. But, I mean, it's quite a long movie, and it really just whizzed by. And I'm not particularly a fan of big Hollywood production movies, as you know. I can kind of take them or leave them. But this I thoroughly enjoyed. I really thought it was it's if you're not a big fan of these things, it's still a silly superhero movie, you know, with lots of people with special powers blowing things up on occasion.
Let's put it into context without Professor Xavier and indeed Eric Lencher as Magneto, we would not have survived the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Exactly,
I mean, you know,
exactly. No, but I think with this one they did it very well. The set pieces are very well put together, but they don't linger. It's not a special effects heavy movie where we're constantly reminded that they've spent all this money in the computer, you know, generating all this stuff. They just, you know, Matthew Vaughn just says, right, okay, we're going to blow that up. Great, we've blown it up. Now let's get on with the story.
Co-written, of course, by Jane Goldman, of course, Jonathan Ross's. But Jane Goldman's stock seems to be soaring in terms of her cinematic work these days, with Kick-Ass and a variety of other things. Of course, Green Lantern coming up, as we mentioned, and of course we have those Transformers that are returning. I can see, James, you're salivating at the thought of all of these sort of fantastic super. You need more superheroes.
Very carefully,
exactly. We should have some agricultural superheroes.
Well, there'll be an Animal Farm remake at some point.
Yeah, exactly. All animals are equal, apart, of course, from the pigs, because they've got all the answers. Well, the one that they were given for the example. It's a strange
one. Planet of the Apes, of course. The Rise of the Planet of the Apes is coming on the 12th of August.
That's an interesting one. I mean, clearly there were those who, despite Charlton Heston's cameo as an ape in the Tim Burton reimagining of Planet of the Apes, didn't quite feel that. I caught the trailer for Rise of the Planet of the Apes, obviously ahead of X-Men First Class, and I don't know. It does look very dark.
There's a new trailer just been released, I think, yesterday. I think there was a new one released yesterday as well, which gives a little bit more of a mood to it. Mm. It is a very different take on the franchise.
Yeah, I think it's a bit like they thought, let's go and remake Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. And then move on, and we won't do Battle of the Planet of the Apes.
But it's actually more... It's more of a... this one posits that we created the problem through medical intervention,
as opposed to just blowing up the Earth.
I'm such a fan of the first film. I absolutely loved the first film. I just think it's a, you know, if you've never ever seen, if anyone out there has never ever
that's
seen
just
the
a James Barkley, Planet of the Apes with Charlton Heston, take your hands off me, you damn dirty apes.
Yeah, it's just fabulous, and it still stands up today. I think it's still just as strong today.
Well, also,
I'm sure it is. Yes, absolutely.
You mean you haven't seen it, James? It's unbelievable. I mean, sometimes there are times, Louis, where our co-presenters come on board, and I'm just astonished at how many good
old country boy for.
Well, you can still get DVDs.
Exactly.
You can still get Love Film delivered to the country.
Dear me.
We'll try it, shall we?
Yeah, I think so.
But it's seriously a very, very good, very, very good movie. Indeed, very, very apt for today as well. It still has a lot of.
I'm sure it is.
A lot to say as a film.
Raises a heap of issues, but based, of course, on the original Pierre Boulle novel, Monkey Planet,
and had very little to do with the book. Expanse. I mean, I thought the book was great as well, and I'd love to see someone make that. And I was hoping Tim Burton's version. When I started seeing the graphics that were appearing, and the you know, hearing it was on a completely different planet and all that kind of stuff, I just thought, oh, this is great. Huh? So they're going to make the book, you know, finally.
Plus, of course, that didn't make anything.
No, really.
Well, they gave the opportunity for Gary Oldman to have a monkey costume put on him. So I mean, there was that. Helena Bonham Carter,
like
obviously. It's true. I mean, Helena Bonham Carter obviously decided to actually do a turn as Bubbles, you know, for keeping the Michael Jackson thing going. So that was always nice, which paved the way for her role in other Tim Burton extravaganzas, like, of course, Alice in Wonderland. But yeah, it was okay. And I thought the Abraham Lincoln kind of denouement at the end was all right. But no, I mean, the iconographic image of the Statue of Liberty and, you know, the falling to the knees of Taylor, you blew it up.
Now you're going to tell everyone the...
No. I'm just
spoiling. Well, 1969.
I think sometimes these. I mean, you just have to see episodes of The Simpsons. Dr. Zaius. Sorry, I saw your Planet of the Apes moment there.
Yeah.
Or indeed the 14-episode TV series with Roddy McDowall, James Norton, and Ron Harper. Who, curiously, here's a question for you, Louis. What was the series that Ron Harper was connected with before he was one of the astronauts in the TV series Planet of the Apes?
I don't know.
Well, there is an ape connection because it was called Garrison's Gorillas.
Oh, really?
Garrison's Gorillas. All about a kind of Mission Impossible type American Army Corps that were sort of sent in to deal with things in the Second World War.
I don't know that one at all.
Well, there's something to check out. It wasn't really SF, it's more kind of spy-fi but with a war theme. And quite a nice little number as well. Garrison's Gorillas. Oh, genius stuff there. Obviously, things continue in all manner of wonderful ways. And next week, of course, you'll be delighted to know, keeping the cult theme going, we will hopefully, we're just arranging tour deals now, be able to actually feature the lovely actress Annette Andre. Of course, from Randall and Hopkirk, Deceased, and various other folk, etc. She'll be joining us. And we're still hopeful that we'll be connecting via yourself, Louis, with the Owen Allen people in the not-too-distant future.
Yes.
On the case. Sorry, no. Just putting that down from that point of view. Okay, Tallulah Randall is coming. James, any questions you want to put to Louis about, you know, because I sense the kind of the air of a novice here when it comes to speculative fiction, science fiction, SF film, etc. So maybe you might want to ask him for his advice. Where should you start, really?
Well, I'm a total novice, absolutely. But
I feel actually, James, in the same way as I felt when you were defining the heritage of the Lincolnshire curly... pigs and the cattle and the Lincolnshire Red, etc. I thought, I hear the words, but I'm just not connecting with them. But I did. You know, I went on a journey with you, agriculturally speaking, and I feel I'm still on.
I've gone on a journey this morning. Thank you very much for filling me in on what you do.
Well, I would certainly, if you want a few films to sort of get your teeth around, I'd recommend probably three from the 70s. Or around the 60s and 70s, that are very iconic that you should see. One would be Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Soylent Green, which is another Charlton Heston film.
Soylent Green.
Soylent.
Soylent.
Yeah.
Based on a novel.
And again, agriculturally, it's a film about mankind has finally killed everything.
Yeah.
You know, we've got rid of all of the. Even the plankton.
Soylent Green is people. Sorry.
And it's fabulous. It's a little long, and it suffers from being a sort of 1973, 74.
Yeah, 73. And
an awful lot of exposition, but.
But you have
it's Edward G. Robinson.
I was going to say, and Lee Taylor Young, who is actually in there, and of course it's based on the novel by Harry Harrison entitled "Make Room, Make Room."
Yeah, it's a fabulous, fabulous film, and again, it's one that really. The story is so very, very for now.
Yep.
I'd also recommend something like Fahrenheit 451, which is based on a Ray Bradbury book. Francis Truffaut's only science fiction film. Oscar Meyer, Nick Rogue was the cinematographer. I mean, it's a fabulous piece of work.
Slight point, Louis. Could you not argue that Francis Truffaut obviously did Close Encounters of the Third Kind? I mean, obviously he's an actor as opposed to a director.
Yeah, no, so I don't think it counts because he was just acting.
Fair enough. Yes, exactly. Sorry. Louis, as always, we've managed to get the magic out of 900 seconds worth of broadcasting time in a way which just teased ahead. As you said, to quote specifically, I will just actually tease ahead to some of the London 2012 stuff and indeed some of the October materials. So the last two questions are, first of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat with us on the Midweek Drive fun. Morning Edition? And can we look forward to featuring you again in the very near future?
Yep, no problem at all. No
well, you're
as soon as I know something, as soon as I've got something to tell you, I'll be on I'll be on the wire.
We'll be working through. It's just nice to have you shooting the breeze telephonically about all sorts of things. You know,
thank you for educating me this morning.
Not a problem. No. Not a problem.
And for those people who do appreciate the joys of X-Men First Class, your reward, Louis, the theme.